welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. Now's the time to be purchasing those new plants for your garden, and our guest today can help you pick some really good ones. Laura Jahl, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison, and she'll answer your questions about spring flowers and shrubs and give you some tips on planting them. Have you had a problem finding the right plant for a spot in your yard? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email at ideas@wpr.org, or you can post a question or comment on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And Laura Jahl, welcome back.
Glad to be back, Larry.
Well, it's great to have you here. Thinking about planting, things to plant, what are the basic things to remember when you're selecting a plant for your garden?
Well, I would say cultural considerations is the most important. Well, a lot of people are buying annuals and perennials right now, and I would first, does the plant need sun or shade? That mm-hmm. makes a huge difference. I see a lot of people planting hostas in full sun, and there are some hostas that can tolerate a little bit more sun than others, but for the most part, they can get sunburn if you plant them in full sun. Also, something to be concerned about is your moisture needs and especially your soil, existing soil. If your soil is really poor with poor drainage, many plants planted in that situation would not do well. So that those are key things to keep in mind.
And then when we go to select plants, I mean, I'm always trying to look for healthy plants, and yeah. And what am I looking for? What should we be looking for?
Well, you want, if you're buying, say, an annual or perennial, you want to make sure it you know, fills the pot. Look, the leaves are green and healthy, no yellowing of foliage. Look for, they shouldn't have insects, but I always look. No holes in the leaves, no spots on the leaves that could potentially be a disease. And I always, you know, I know it drives some people crazy when I go to the garden center, but if I'm buying especially shrubs or any large plant in a container, I like to look at the root system and I pull it out of the pot. You know, see those roots. They should be relatively well developed without any kinked roots or crossing or circling roots. And I feel that's really important because if your plant that you pay all this money for has a horrible root system, it's not going to perform well.
And, you know, this time of the year, you know, we're eager to get everything out. And here we've had such a weird...
It's been wacky.
...weather. And, you know, today... you know, it's cold.
It's 45.
It's going to be cold this whole weekend and wet and, you know,
just when you want to get out in the yard.
Yeah, just when you want to get out there. You know, just sort of keeping them happy or when, you know, do you see a day like we've got or a weekend like we've got here going to be cold and miserable? Do you go out and plant them anyway?
Well, I have lots of... vegetables I want to get in my garden, and especially like tomatoes and stuff. It's really chilly today. I'm actually, because the weather is supposed to get, again, cold tonight, bring them in the garage and then put them out on either Saturday or Sunday when it's sunny and warmer. But when it comes to perennials and other woody plant perennials, you can still plant them outside. Yeah. It's just some of your vegetables and cold-sensitive plants I'd watch out for.
Yeah, for sure. We have Cynthia emailed. She has had a patch of lavender for about 15 years, but really was never sure how to properly care for it. She lives in southeastern Wisconsin. The plants are on a west-facing hillside, so they get sufficient drainage and sun, but right now they look very scraggly, put a scientific word to it, with a lot of gray dead looking branches with bright green growth interspersed. And she has periodically culled out the dead areas, but the patch never seems pretty. Yeah. I know what she's talking about.
Yeah, lavender can be tricky. Lavender needs excellent drainage. If the soils are too heavy or poorly drained, they will look terrible. Lavender, you're in the southeastern part of the state, so it's probably doing fine for cold hardiness. We have certain cultivars are less hardy than others. I'm trying to think of a specific one that's a little bit more cold hardy, and I'm drawing a blank. I can see it in the catalog, but I can't see the name. Anyways, another thing, they need full sun, obviously. And if you have some, you never want to cut lavender all the way back. It won't come back very well. But removing the dead leaves, like you said you've been doing, perhaps lavender does not need a lot of fertilizer. You might want to try adding some slow-release fertilizer to maybe pep it up a little bit. But good air circulation is needed, and shearing off the dead material would help.
Every time lavender comes up, I think about our garden tour that our public radio listeners took to Hawaii.
Hawaii was growing lavender?
Oh, on a hillside, and it was gorgeous.
Wow.
And that was part of the trip, and it was really fun and smelled great, and bought a lot of lavender products and just had a really great time. But it was doing really well on a hillside. I'm trying to think if it was Oahu. Somebody listening from that tour can probably remind me, and I can't. We visited several islands, so it was a great place to grow lavender. And a guy that was growing it really knew what he was doing too, so that helps. And we have some lavender in
Wisconsin. Yep,
doing pretty well in Door County, if I'm not mistaken.
There's some also in southwestern Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So. You can grow it.
You can grow it if your soil's right.
Kevin in Tomahawk has a question. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah. Hi, good morning.
Morning.
A friend
good
of
morning.
Ours was given a sprig of bamboo a few years ago, and now it's starting to run everywhere. Is there a way to stop that? She wants to totally eliminate it out of their yard.
Oh,
that's
boy.
A great question.
That's hard.
This brings back nightmares. I did my graduate work in North Carolina, and I worked at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, and we had to remove a quarter acre of bamboo, and it was awful. The roots run everywhere. Now, there are clumping type of bamboos that don't run, but whenever I hear the word bamboo, I just like, oh, I have these horror stories because it just... It grows everywhere. You can try systemic, and I emphasize the word systemic herbicides to get rid of the bamboo. If you just do a topical spray of a non-systemic herbicide, the roots aren't killed. So anything with glyphosate, some of the other products, it's going to be a challenge because getting those roots dead is going to take a number of applications and probably a several years to fully get rid of it. I would not dig it up unless it's a small patch because you could be propagating it by digging parts of the roots up and then they start to proliferate and grow more. Seems like they get revenge.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I would cut the stems right at the base and immediately treat with a systemic herbicide.
If you had a patch of it and it was all right together, could you cover it and try and kill it that way?
You know, with bamboo...
You can't do it.
No. It's such a vigorous, invasive... Some of the bamboos, not all of them, but they can be quite invasive.
So not such good news, Kevin.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. It's got to roll up your sleeves and get at it. Karen in Racine up next. Hi, Karen. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I am just overcome because one of my favorite beds here is filled with hostas. I've been working at it for a number of years. So I just discovered I have a Fuji Bhutan and, oh, my goodness, a huge Montana Oreo. Anyway, all these different varieties. And now they seemed, five or six different varieties in that bed. And now they seem to be covered with these small yellowish-whitish spots. And I'm afraid it's Hosta virus X. And that also seem to have affected in amongst there. I have daylilies. Does this Hosta virus X go to other species? Not species, other plants. Could I dig these out? I know I'm supposed to dig these out and put them in the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Could I plant a shrub? Could I plant other, you know, shady tolerant plants other than hostas in that empty bed once I empty it?
Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, Hosta Virus X is just affects hostas, but I'm not totally positive. Dig up a sample and get it to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic or your local county extension office. And they can help you with sending it to get it diagnosed. First of all, is it really Hosta Virus X?
Yeah,
right.
You want to know that.
Yeah.
So can you think of anything else that would be a small white dots? I took a picture here. Or yellowish. I think they're more yellow than white that would be affecting that daylily as well.
The daylily, it's really early for daylily rust. You might want to send that one, too, with the hosta. But it's not Hosta Virus X on the daylily.
It's not? It's a different virus.
Probably.
That's probably why you should get a sample into the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic
Where is that Plant Disease Diagnostic?
It's on the campus of UW-Madison.
Oh, Lord.
But like I said, go to your local county extension office and the horticulture agent can help you.
Okay. All right. So, in the meantime, I don't know what to do with this bed. I hate to see it.
Yeah, but you should wait. I mean, wait till you find out, because it might be something totally different that you can deal with. And if you can get a sample in, soon, if you can't do it today, maybe Monday, to the extension office, there's going to be a master gardener or a hort agent there that can look at it. And if they don't know, they'll send it off to Brian Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, taking a look at woody ornamentals and flowers and shrubs with our guest today, Laura Jull, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Laura Jull, taking a look at woody ornamentals in your yard. And if you have questions or comments or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Here's... Christine on Facebook wonders what's the latest date she can move ferns. Ferns you can move, they're pretty hardy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, right when they're starting to leaf out, probably not during that time, either before they start to show their fronds coming up from the ground. If you're doing division, definitely before growth has started, or wait until... I wouldn't even wait until fall for division. I would do it now. If you're just transplanting it to another place in your yard, make sure you get as much of the root system up as possible. And ferns do like, partial shade to shade, most of them. So I'd just be careful. Try to get as much of the root system as possible.
Daniel's on Facebook is looking for plant ideas to start a butterfly garden in his front yard. The problem is the spot sits between a white birch tree and his fence. Any plant ideas? That sounds shady for sure. Not in bad, but in shade. And maybe some shade mix recommendations. Also, can he plant bulbs in the garden as well so he gets color most of the summer?
The only problem I see with this is you're planting by a white birch tree, and anytime you add soil on top of the ground and you have a tree there, you're actually raising the grade, even if it's only a couple inches, I worry about that can cause some harm to the birch tree, especially white birch that are sensitive. If you are just planting in the existing ground without adding a lot of topsoil to it, there's many things you can plant. I personally love daffodils. I've had a ton of them in the garden. I haven't seen too many butterflies flying to it, but they come up so early. There's many things you can plant. One of our native plants, the button bush. The button bush is Cephalanthus occidentalis, if anybody wants to know the scientific names. That particular plant is a wetland species, but it can grow in the landscape as long as it has some good moisture. And that has the most unique flowers. They look like, if some of you are of the age generation that I am, they look like Sputnik or a satellite,
yeah.
A Russian satellite. They're very unique looking, and they attract butterflies like crazy. That's a wonderful plant. And then there's always perennials. There's lots of perennials. I don't know how much sun you have. It says here, shady. I would stay away from the coneflowers if it's too shady, because those need full sun. But there's many, many perennials out there that attract butterflies. And I'm trying to think of some for shade. Can't think of them for shade. Most of the ones I know are all for sun. But if you go to your local garden center, I'm sure they can help you with some choices out there.
And I know somebody's going to ask, what was the name of that Sputnik-like plant again?
Button bush.
Button bush.
Yeah. And the scientific name, do you want that, Larry?
No.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't be able to write it down fast enough. Let's let's go to Patrick in Shatek next. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's it going?
Good. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Oh, we're calling from the tornado zone up here.
Oh, no.
Lots of downed trees, lots of evergreens, lots of white pines, big boys that have gone down.
That's so sad.
Yeah, I know. It's for some people, it's their primary home. For others like us, it's just a vacation cottage, so it's not as serious, you know?
Yep.
But lots of downed trees all over the place. But I've always loved white pine. And I'm just looking for kind of a short list of trees to replant besides that for these northern Wisconsin situations.
Yeah.
You don't want to replant it with some white pines?
No, I do. I love it, but I don't. Yeah. I don't want to have all the same. I mean, I want to mix it up.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, they're up in your neck of the woods. White pines obviously are one of my personal favorites. I have a big one in my yard, and I just love it.
This story will make you cry, because we had one that went down that was almost 3 foot in diameter.
Oh.
And it just crashed. But anyway, a lot of people have sad stories. That's not a sad story compared to what some people are experiencing up here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. There's always a Swiss stone pine. You are in zone 4, correct?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I think it's 4.
Yeah, I think it's 4. Yeah, Swiss stone pine, and that's Pinus sembra. And Swiss stone pine is a five-needle pine, so it's really soft. It's slower growing, but it's very dense, with foliage. It's a beautiful plant. Another one I like that you could try up there that's a pine is a Korean pine, Pinus coreensis. And that one kind of looks like a white pine, but I love the color. It's more blue-green. It's got a glaucous look to it, or whitish look to the needles. It has larger cones, and it's a really beautiful tree. There's so many choices. One thing I want to say, and Brian Huddleston, if he's listening, he'll probably appreciate this, don't plant a blue spruce. And the reason why is they're very disease-susceptible and short-lived.
Yeah.
We're even losing them at the Arboretum.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So stay away from blue spruce, but Swiss stone pine and Korean pine.
Yes.
In addition to the white.
In addition to the white.
In addition to the white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Good. Appreciate the help, guys.
Sure.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Patrick. Appreciate your call. Linda in Marinette, it's your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, appreciate your call. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Perfect. What can we do to help you?
Well, I was listening to your talk about ferns. I'm trying to get rid of ferns.
Okay.
I don't want to move them. I want to get rid of them. And also, we bought some property, and it has apple trees on, but it has mulch all the way around the apple trees, and it's actually up by the bark. It can't be good for them, so I want to know what I can do, and the bark on the apple tree is actually starting to peel away.
Oh, it's
too bad.
Yeah,
that's not good. Well, mulch, you can kill a tree with mulch, and you can help a tree with mulch. Mulching, the mulch should never touch the trunk of the tree. And unfortunately, I don't know who started this trend, the mulch volcanoes, as I call them, where they pile too much mulch against the trunk of the tree. I've seen landscapers do this, homeowners. It is the worst thing you can do for trees.
So pull it off
of the trunk and spread the mulch out. The wider the mulch, the better, but not too thick. No more than 3 to 4 inches max. And in fact, 2 might be better in your situation. And that's to keep the soil cool, keep hopefully some of the weeds out, though weed seeds do blow in, but don't have it touch the trunk of the tree.
Now, this has been sitting there for like 2 years like this. Is this what's causing the bulk, the bark on it to peel away?
Yeah. If it's down where the mulch is.
It's actually going up the tree.
From the trunk at the base?
Yes, the base.
Yeah, you probably have some rot starting, potentially some trunk or collar rot that is you know, so many times I see this in the landscape, and I've often been known to come in at night and kick the mulch off the tree trunk to help people's trees so they don't die. I would try to get that mulch off the tree, get some air in there, help dry out that trunk, because that tissue should never be covered with mulch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do it right away.
Ferns. What do I do with them?
Ferns.
Do you know what kind of ferns they are?
They grow wild. That's all I know.
Oh, boy.
No, they're big ones.
It could be ostrich fern, which is native, though it's so aggressive. And I don't recommend planting it unless you want a whole area full of ostrich fern, because it's a real bear to get rid of.
Yeah, it's in we have a little island off our property, and it's just loaded with them.
Yeah, it's probably what it
right
is.
Right on the river, it's just loaded with them.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, if it was just a couple plants, I would say dig it up. But in your situation, there's a lot. And if it's right next to a river, you got to be very careful with any type of herbicide you use. I'm not an herbicide expert. I'm not sure what is labeled for ostrich fern. We just had this question that I received, and I referred it to Mark Renz at UW-Madison. He is a weed specialist. I would say contact your county extension agent, who then would get in contact with the right people if they don't know which product you could use. But I worry about it being so close to a river, like you said, you're going to have to be very careful in what you spray.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Patricia in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. Aloha, Larry. I have a question, but I wanted to remind you our lavender farm was on Maui.
Maui.
We ate there, had our lunch there, and we had a lavender lemonade along with our sandwiches, and your daughter walked with an iguana on her shoulder.
I remember the iguana. I just couldn't remember Maui.
Yeah.
Thanks, Patricia.
Yeah, anyway, my question is it too late to transplant a red oak tree? I've got one growing. The squirrel must have planted, and it's about 3.5 feet tall.
And so it's little.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has it leafed out yet?
It's just starting to get leaves on it now.
Okay. I would not transplant it right now. When the plant is leafing out is the worst possible time to move anything. You would need to do it either before it leafs out or wait till the leaves have fully expanded, and probably in June, and then you can move it. If it's just a little guy, yeah. And okay. Try to get as much of the root system as possible. Roots, since it's a seedling, the roots might not be that extensive yet, and you're going to want to try to get as much of the roots as possible.
Okay. Mahalo.
Mahalo, Patricia. Thank you very much for calling. Oh, good to hear from her. We had a lot of fun on that trip. Jeff in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Hey, I was listening to you guys talk about the mulch up against the bark, and I have a couple fruit trees, cherry and apple, which the rabbits like to gnaw on the bark. So over the winter, I put that white covering. Should that come off for the summer? Does it matter?
The material goes around the trunk of the tree, but it's not touching the trunk?
Well, a little bit, I guess. It's bigger than the trunk.
Okay. But it's not like a wrap.
Correct.
Okay. Yes. You can leave it on. So I know a lot of people do if in an orchard... help prevent voles and other critters from gnawing on the base of the tree.
Right.
It also keeps the weed whackers from damaging the trunk of the tree. Mm-hmm. It's not going to harm the tree. It's white, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
White, plastic, ridgy kind of thing.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And the trees are obviously bigger, taller than the actual plastic material that goes... You know, some people do remove it. You can do that, but make sure you put it back on again before winter, because that's when they really like to do that for
fruit trees. I've learned my lesson.
Yeah, and it's mainly for fruit trees. You don't need to do this to shade trees or other ornamental trees.
Correct. Okay.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, appreciate the call. John in Janesville, your turn. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
Great. Appreciate your call.
That's good. I have an English plane tree. It's a sycamore family.
Yeah, it's a London plane tree.
A London plane tree?
Mm-hmm.
And this year it's hardly got any leaves on it, and the branches all are, like, bare, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They're dropping out of the tree like crazy, long sticks. Mm. And then, you know, just a few leaves on the rest of the tree. And I was wondering, is it totally dead or is there something I should do to it?
Well, you're in Janesville, so it's plenty hardy in Janesville. How old is this tree?
About 10 years.
Ooh. So it's pretty established. It could be a number of things. It's too early, really, perhaps, to see anthracnose, though. This is the time of year that sycamores get infected with anthracnose, which causes the leaves to drop and a canker to form right on the stems. But it's really, did it leaf out at all?
Yeah. It's about maybe a third of what it would normally have for leaves.
Yeah.
How did it look last year?
Last year it was pretty good, and I had them do a deep root fertilization thing on it.
How close to was this a professional company that was hired?
Yeah.
Okay. How far? Yeah.
Kemlon or something like that.
Ooh. Turf fertilizers often are too much nitrogen in them. This is more of a thing I'd have to see to really determine what's going on. Could you take pictures?
Sure.
And then I would, your county extension office in Janesville, Rock County, they have an extension agent there. Send the pictures to them, and if they don't know, they'll forward it to me.
Okay.
Okay.
Could it be possibly root girdling?
You know... girdling roots is usually a longer term thing. It's not all of a sudden you see the leaves dropping off. That's more of a, it starts to look bare 1 year and more than the next and so on. It's a 10-year-old tree, so it is established. But I'd like to see if you could take pictures, especially towards the base of the tree, where the trunk meets the ground, as well as the entire tree, and then a close-up of the branches and leaves.
Okay.
So a few pictures.
What's your first name?
Laura?
Yeah, but go to your county extension office first.
Okay.
They're the first line of defense. I don't want to say defense. First line of information. That's what I meant to say. Sorry. For you guys, that's their job. And then if they don't know, then they forward it to me.
All right.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks for calling. And Carol in Madison, we're on to you now. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, we have a birch tree out in front of our house, and it was put in before we ever moved here, and it's in front of the two-story part of our house. We have kind of a Brady Bunch house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's almost at the end of its life. And someone had told me that while it's still living, you can plant a tree right near it, and that one will grow, and then when you lose the birch, you'll have a well-started tree. But it's a rock garden area inside of a retaining wall, so I was kind of worried about how close we could fit it.
Hmm. Is your birch tree sick?
Well, I think it's just maybe at the end of its life. I think it was probably planted here when the house was built in the late 60s, early 70s.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think they don't live that long, do they?
Well, is this a white bark birch?
Yes.
Yeah, it really depends on location. White bark birches have notoriously been short-lived because people plant them in full baking sun. The top of the tree needs full sun, but the root system likes afternoon shade. White bark birches are really susceptible to bronze birch borer, which is a native insect that will bore into stressed birch trees, white bark birches. River birch is not susceptible to it. And I always say an eastern or a northeastern exposure facing, so that in the afternoon the sun is passed and the roots are shaded. That is the best environment for a white bark birch, but the top of the plant is in full sun.
I think that's actually true. I think it's on the north side of the house.
Yep. Then it can live. I've seen white bark birch trees that had pretty good size trunks on them when they were planted in a cool, a good environment without drought stress. Birches are also very susceptible to drought stress. And, you know, one thing about planting a tree right next to it, you got to be concerned that tree that you plant is going to be shaded. Number one. Number two, you're going to be disturbing the root system of the birch tree, which may send it into shock. I don't recommend putting it right next to it. I'd probably plant it away from it.
If it's
still looking good, you're lucky. Yeah. Enjoy it.
It had four different trunks, and two are already gone.
I see.
Okay. Did they die, or were they just removed?
They broke off in storms.
Oh, okay.
And the last two kind of look like thing one and thing two in Dr. Seuss. You know, they're kind of... There's not much left except the very top.
Okay.
You might just want to whack them off and put a new one.
Yeah.
I put another one just like it in there, given that that one did so well for so long.
Yeah. Or, you know, something else, if you want a flowering tree or something else to be planted instead.
Well,
but if it's a north-facing slope.
Tall like that?
I'm sorry?
What else would grow tall like that?
Oh, a lot of trees. It depends on, you know, is it in full sun, but afternoon?
No, it's afternoon. It really, I think, is afternoon shade, but mostly from the house next door. I guess there's not other trees that shade it too much. It's just that because it's on the north side, I don't think it gets hit that hard.
Yeah, well, that's actually good for many plants. You know, you could go with And I don't want to say maples because we have way too many maples out there as it is, and we're going to run into potential problems in the future with a insect or disease, you know, kind of like emerald ash borer and Dutch elm disease wiped out the elms, now the ash. There are many trees. There's oaks. It depends on how big of a tree you want. I know a lot of different trees that could fit there, but it really depends on your tastes and what you like.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love the birch. I think we just want another one.
Yeah. Sounds like. And if you got the good soil and good exposure and not drought ridden or in the hot baking sun in the afternoon, then I'd go with the birch.
Yeah.
Would it be easier to just take it out? And does a new birch go up pretty fast?
Well, I wouldn't say fast. It's a moderate growth rate.
Oh.
If you're going to go with the birch, white bark birch, if that is, you know, and I'm always hesitant to recommend them because of the bronze birch borer issue, but I would go with either our native paper birch or another one that does very well here, if it's not stressed, is White Spire Senior Birch. And that is a gray birch. It's not native, but it's native to the eastern U.S. And, you know, it says it's borer resistant. It's not. It's less susceptible, but it's not resistant.
White Spire?
Birch.
Okay.
It's a White Spire Senior, but a lot of people just call it White Spire. But the true one is White Spire Senior.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Laura Jell, our guest, professor and extension specialist for Woody Ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Talking about choosing plants for your lawn and garden area with our guest today, Laura Jell, professor and extension specialist for Woody Ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Larry Mueller here. And every one of our phone lines is filled, so let's go right back to Bobby and Appleton next then. Bobby, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I live in Appleton. We recently built a cabin in Washera County on 250 acres of Christmas tree farm. It's absolutely beautiful. My concern is that it's the time of year when people are dividing perennials and willing to give us, here for your cabin, and we take them, and now I'm all concerned about this Japanese jumping worm. So no more of that, I don't think, but I need your expertise on this.
Yeah, you got to be really careful with accepting jumping worms from other people, or plants, I should say, mm-hmm. from other people's gardens, because the soil potentially could be infected with the jumping worms. I know we have it all over Madison area. I'm not sure about Appleton.
I'm not sure about Appleton either, but you don't want them, that's for sure. And you're being very prudent, I think. And there's a lot of plant sales going on right now, too.
Right.
And
right.
You want to... Many plants, like plant sale at the Arboretum, for example, their plants were guaranteeing.
Yeah, most garden centers, especially with annuals and perennials, they're grown in artificial soil or soilless mix, meaning that they don't have any soil in them. It could be pine bark, peat moss, sand, a mixture of all those, perlite. Those are safe. But if it's coming from an area that, you know, like a bald and burlap tree, I'm not saying not buy them. I'm not saying that at all. But if it's in an area known to have the jumping worms, you could be introducing them to your yard.
Okay. So if I buy them at a nursery or, you know, like from a retailer, they're probably safe.
Well, if it's in a container.
In a container.
Yes.
Okay.
Though, you know, I'm a big fan for bare rooting trees, buying them bare root and then planting them. There's no mm-hmm. soil on them. Mm-hmm. But the time to do that has, it's coming to an end, because once they start leafing out, you shouldn't be dinging them up for bare root.
Okay. Thank
All right.
You so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Robin in Portage, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks, Larry and Laura, for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question is about my flowering lilac tree.
Okay.
It's 4 years old this year. Last year was the first year that it had quite a few blooms on it. for the size of the tree. It's still very small. But this year, so far, I see only two sprouts that are coming out, or whatever you call them, that are going to bloom on this tree. Where last year I had a lot more. I mean, you know, three, four times that. Oh. And I'm not sure what's going on, why that happened. Mm. So I did do something that maybe was the wrong thing. About a month ago, there were these little, like, two-inch twigs sticking out from branches, from thin branches, not main branches, and they would just break off. I'd find some of them on the ground. So they looked awful, so I decided to cut them off.
Okay, one question I have, what color are the flowers?
White.
Okay, so this is like a Japanese tree lilac?
Or is it a bush?
No, it's not a bush. It's a tree.
It's a tree. Okay, it's probably one of the like Japanese tree lilac, or Peking tree lilac is another one. Those don't bloom. It's a year in Portage. Those don't bloom until June. So, you know, you may not see them, the flowers yet, obviously.
Well, there's no flowers, but
they haven't developed yet. Okay, one thing. Second thing is, especially with the Japanese tree lilac, it's like ivory silk is a very common cultivar. There's several others that are nice, but they tend to bloom heavily every other year. And then the second thing is, if it's a young tree, and you've had it for how long?
This has got to be the fourth year.
Fourth year. Mm-hmm. Well, if it was less than 4 years, I would say a lot of times when you buy it, it flowers that year, but the following year it doesn't, and that's because it's trying to establish a root system before it starts to flower again. Any of the lilacs, if you prune them before they flower, typically flower, you are removing flower buds. It's not harmful to the tree, but you won't be able to enjoy the bloom. And again, the tree lilacs don't bloom until June.
Okay, if the problem, part of the problem was is because I cut these little twigs.
Yeah, I wouldn't cut those off.
Okay, I won't do it again.
Okay. Okay.
But
unless they're dead, obviously.
Will it be okay? Well, they appeared all to be dead. There was no green.
Well,
and so many of them just broke right off.
Yeah. Then they probably were dead if they just broke off.
Yeah.
I'd just make sure, you know, that the tree is in full sun, because tree lilacs won't bloom in the shade.
It's on the south side.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're doing the right thing.
Give it another year at least, Robin.
Yeah, I would.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question, because you were talking about mulch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did not plant this tree. I had a greenhouse planted for me.
Okay.
And they mulched it, and I continued to mulch it, but now it has overgrown, that mulch is overgrown with grass and weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a problem?
Well, if you just want grass, it's not a huge issue, though grass is competitive with trees for water and nutrient uptake. I'm a big fan of getting rid of the grass right underneath the tree, putting down mulch no more than, 2 to 4 inches, depending on your soil type, less, obviously, if it's poorly drained. And make sure to keep that mulch away from the trunk of the tree.
Uh-huh.
It should not be touching the trunk at the base.
Well, maybe it is at this point, though I don't see any problems with the trunk of the tree. I
would make sure it's away.
I'll dig it up and remove it.
All right.
And put new mulch in. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Rick in New Glarus, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Laura.
Sure.
Well, I got to pull my mulch away from my trees that I'm about to ask you a question on already. Thanks for that, Laura.
Yeah, okay. Sure.
Anyway, you mentioned earlier, and I, I've been a listener for a long time, and I must have missed the shows over the years that said don't plant Colorado blue spruce trees, because last year I planted 12 8-foot trees, So a show of Larry's a few weeks ago, one of the guests was mentioning that Rhizosphera, the fungus that that these trees get.
Yeah.
And so the trees are really in good shape. They're candling right now. But I went out and looked, and all these trees have this fungus on their needles. So they've got the black spots, just classic for what you described and what you see on the internet when you look.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, one of them has dropped. One of the smaller ones has dropped a few needles on the inner branches and in the lower aspect. So I assume it's starting to have a problem. So I went out right away, and the recommendation was I used. I don't remember what the generic name is, but the trade name is Daconil for fungus.
Mm-hmm.
And I sprayed all of them with that, and lo and behold, I just, maybe it's my imagination, but they all seem to be a lot happier about 4 days afterwards. And so my question is, now that they're planted, I'm not going to pull them out or cut them down. What can I do to maintain them, to get them to grow up? I see a lot of big spruce trees. The older ones seem to be resistant to this kind of thing.
No, they're not, actually.
No? Well, that's good to know. What can I do to maintain them and get them through this, if anything?
Well, and it was probably Brian Huddleston was the host.
Yes, he was the guest.
That's his, like, I don't know if it's his biggest moneymaker for the lab, but he gets blue spruce samples all the time. Colorado blue spruce is, as you know, very, very, very susceptible to Rhizosphera as well as Cytosper canker. And the reason why, you know, people say, well, why can't we grow it here? You can grow it here, but its native habitat is Colorado and the Rockies, where it's arid. The air is dry. It is not humid like it is here. And even our perfect soil conditions at the Arboretum, they're all getting it and starting to get really thin and look bad. The most important thing is, first of all, they have to be in well-drained soil. They have to have full sun. You could do and plant them farther apart. Well, they're already planted, but if you're going to plant them far apart. You know, blue spruce can have a 30 foot or more spread. So, yeah, people don't like planting them 30 feet apart because then it looks barren until they get older. But by planting them too close together, you've just exacerbated the problem with the high humidity around the needles. You can do some selective pruning, maybe open them up a little bit, especially on the bottom, to get some airflow in there. But there's, other than cultural things, there's not much you can do, but you are spraying. But I personally am not a fan of spraying, only because I'm lazy.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to be going out there. I used to spray pesticides for a living, and it's probably why I'm a little off today. But, you know, just do the best you can to get some airflow in there.
You might have to eliminate a few just to get the air.
If they're too close.
They're too close.
Well, they're going to eliminate themselves, it sounds like. But,
yeah,
no, but if you do spray the antifungals, do they tend to work?
You know, that's a question for Brian Huddleston. He's the disease specialist at UW. You know, a lot of people say it helps, but you're going to have to be doing it on a regular basis. And
every year.
Every year. And
they get big, and then it gets hard to do it.
And you're going to have a professional do it when the trees get big, because it'll be impossible from a homeowner standpoint.
Now, they did the extensive literature with the stuff said twice when they're candling, when they're starting to bloom right now, and then 4 weeks later for the first 2 to 3 years, and then once a year after that is what it said.
Yeah. Brian has a really nice fact sheet on the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, the UW, and that website has many, many fact sheets on various diseases, and he has one on Rhizosphera, so I recommend you take a look at that, too.
Do they spray at the Arboretum? Do they spray any
needles?
They don't.
No.
So they just let it happen. So I might... I was worried once you said that you're doing everything possible, but really you're not spraying for any fungals.
They don't at the Arboretum.
Okay, well...
That I know of. I do know they have sprayed for scale, because it was on the magnolias, and... Oh, magnolias. I'd hate to lose those.
Yeah.
The spruce trees do get scales as well, but that's a different treatment, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
And what's the other disease that these these trees get?
Cytospora canker.
Is that a fungus?
Yes, it's a fungus, and there's, to my knowledge, no known labeled fungicides for that one. It's what it does is attacks typically the bottom branches. There's a canker that forms on the undersides of the branches and eventually works its way up the tree so that more branches become affected. And I know you've probably seen this, a blue spruce on a stick where there's only a few branches at the top of the tree and nothing down. That's classic Cytospora canker.
Okay.
It's just, unfortunately, it's so beautiful, the tree, but boy, is it just ridden with diseases.
Yeah. Well, for me, the cows are out of the barn.
Yeah,
I think so. Well, thank you so much for calling, Rick, and good luck. Appreciate your call. We had a listener wanted to remind us, and this is very good, not to send in samples to the diagnostic labs at the end of the week.
Yes.
So they sit in...
on the loading dock.
On the loading dock, and especially warm conditions, and then you've got a gooey mess when you come in on Monday morning. So better to send early in the week and preferably Monday. Well, our guest today, Laura Jowell. Laura is an associate professor, an extension specialist. She works in woody ornamentals, and her department is horticulture at UW-Madison for Garden Talk. Thanks so much for joining us for this edition of Garden Talk. We're visiting with Laura Jowell. Laura, a professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison. Zeroing in a bit on those woody ornamentals, but we can talk bush, shrubs, and flowers too. And every one of our phone lines is filled. So we're going to go right back to the phones and talk to Jill in Cedarburg next. Hi, Jill. Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Laura, I have a question about some evergreen trees, what to plant. We had some pretty strong storms and winds Wednesday night here in southeastern Wisconsin. And out of about a patch of about 30 evergreen trees, very tall, 40-foot ones, we lost 6.
Mm.
Yeah, and of course they're not like all on the end where, you know, it'd be nice and easy. There's 3 trees, then 3 trees missing, 3 trees, then 3 trees missing. So out of the kind of 9 trees that surrounded those, we're going to take those down eventually as well. But these evergreen trees provided a lot of privacy for us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of wind protection for our neighbors behind us. So we would like to, again, plant something that will... again, like I said, provide lots of privacy, wind protection, and grow very fast.
Okay.
And cheap, because we have a 12-week-old daughter, and all our money goes to her.
Yeah.
Oh, bless your heart. Well, I can think of a couple things, but one question I have for you, is this full sun?
Correct, yes.
Okay. What's your soil like?
Good, not sandy. Definitely not sandy, nice and dark.
Well-drained?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, not subject to flooding or anything like
no,
that?
No, absolutely not. No, okay. We're a little bit higher up, and then we have a nice kind of culvert ditch to the south of all these trees. So,
okay. You wouldn't happen to know your soil pH, would you?
I would not.
Okay. The reason why I asked, one of the trees I really like, it's not very fast growing. You're not going to find an evergreen that's really, really fast growing.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that I recommend that are faster growing is our native eastern white pine.
Okay.
White pine can put on a significant amount of growth. I have one in my yard, and I've lived there 11 years, and it's gotten huge in that amount of time.
Okay.
But you don't want anything so fast that it's going to break easily. And
correct,
white pine can have some storm damage, but usually it's a beautiful... I love the tree. Another one besides eastern white pine that is a little faster growing, it's a relatively new addition to the nursery industry, and I'm not like trying to endorse a certain nursery, but it was discovered at Johnson's Nursery, and they're in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, and they have one that's called Star Power Juniper. And it is amazingly puts on good amount of growth each year. It's actually a hybrid, and it has kind of a blue-green color to it. Now, the foliage is very, very prickly. I'll just tell you that right up front. But it, you know, talk about low maintenance. Junipers are pretty tough plants as long as the soil is well-drained. If your soil is too alkaline, the white pine can get chlorotic. So that's why I would do a soil test first. Junipers, they can tolerate any pH. They're pretty tough as long as the soil is well-drained.
Okay. And do you know about how tall and wide would those grow? Like, we'd need to know how far to space them. Right now, pretty much all of our pines were only spaced, I would say, 4 feet, 5 feet max.
Wow.
So they were really, oh, boy. The house is 42 years old. I counted rings on the tree. Don't know how accurate that is. But I would say the trees were between the same 42 to 44 years old.
And they're only 4 feet apart?
In some spaces, yes.
Yeah, that's way too close.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Maybe I wouldn't have lost so many trees then.
Yeah, because they're all stretching for the light. Yeah, when it comes to white pines can grow, I've seen some giants in Michigan that were over 100 feet tall, typically around 70 to 80. White pines can get quite tall and quite wide. You know, they can have a spread of 50, 60 feet. And I like to keep the branches to the ground or closer to the ground. I love that look. So many people limb them up and then they put grass underneath, and it's kind of like, why? Let them grow naturally. The juniper, on the other hand, Star Power, is not going to get that big. It's probably about a 20, 25 footer with time. It's not going to be a big one, but again, you want to give it's, I'm guesstimating, because it's a newer plant in the industry. I have not seen a very mature one. So I would say probably about 15 to foot spread on that one. It's beautiful tree.
If you've got them, like if you've got an area where they're really close like that, Laura, would the remaining trees grow out more because there's more room to?
Yeah, if there was a tree that was that came down in the storms, and the two trees next to it, they'll fill in that space. But I wouldn't plant anything that close to another tree. You need to plant them at least, you know, 15, 20 feet apart for a white pine, that is. For a Star Power juniper or even an arborvitae is another one if you don't have deer issues. They don't need to be planted that far apart, but I would do it at least 10, 6 to 8 if you're really trying to do a screen. But even then, that's a bit tight.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the advice and the suggestions. And, we're busy chipping today.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
This was so timely for us.
Thank you. It's free mulch.
Yeah, right?
There you go.
Just keep it off the trunk.
Though. Not around the base. Correct.
No. Right. Thanks, Jill.
Bye-bye.
Bridget in Whitewater, your turn. Hi, Bridget.
Hi there. So some old trees in my yard were damaged by the storm,
mm-hmm.
and one of them was hit by lightning, and so now wow. I'm at a point where I have to trim a tree in springtime, and because I listened to the Larry Mueller show, I know that you're not supposed to do that. Is there some kind of antiseptic or sealer that I can put on the tree, because the goal is to try to save the tree?
Okay.
And what was the tree again? I'm sorry, the type?
One of them is a cottonwood, and the cottonwood is old, like probably 100 years old.
Oh, boy.
And then the other one, I think, is an elm, but I'm not sure.
Okay. First thing, I do not recommend using any tree paint or wound compound on fresh cuts unless it is an oak or elm that is pruned in the growing season. Really, oaks and elms should be pruned in before they leaf out, preferably before April 1st. So dormant season pruning is best for those, but obviously storm damage occurs in spring and summer. Those wounds since they're, I don't know how long they've been there.
A couple days.
Yeah, the storm hit Whitewater not yesterday, the day before,
Wednesday.
It took down so many trees.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, the only thing is, especially with oaks and elms, if the damage occurred, it's almost like you need, they say within an hour or two after the damage is to use that type of wound dressing. That is the only time we recommend those products. And that is to keep out with oaks the...
Elm bark beetle.
Well, elm bark beetle and the picnic beetles for oaks.
Yeah.
Because they're attracted to those fresh wounds. And they could have potentially, with the elm, you could potentially have elm bark beetle that came to those wounds and could have been transferring Dutch elm disease. However, you know, obviously you're not going to go out there in a storm or in the middle of the night. I would have a certified arborist, and I want to stress certified, an International Society of Arboriculture, or ISA, certified arborist, come to your place, assess the storm damage, and obviously look for tree ID to see if you really do have an elm. Certified arborists have gone through training and have taken an exam to know some of the basics of tree care and maintenance. Not everybody out there pruning trees knows what they're doing. Let's just put it that way. And there are many quality companies in Wisconsin. You can go to the Wisconsin Arborist Association website, and if you type in Wisconsin Arborist Association, you will get a website, and they have a link to certified arborists for hire. And in your area, and you can search by your county, and you can come up with some good good quality companies. Second of all, regarding the tree paint wound compound, we don't recommend that for any other species besides oak and elm if they're pruned during the growing season. And the reason why is it actually keeps the wound too wet and slows down wound closure, which is exact opposite of what you want to do. But we do recommend it for oaks and elms because of the insects transferring the disease.
All right.
And what are any suggestions on a maple tree?
Refresh my memory again. What was with the maple?
I said, well, again, too, I believe one of the maple trees in the yard was also
taken down.
Taken down, or part of the tree was taken down.
Yeah.
So,
When it comes to big trees, I stress the importance of hiring a ISA certified arborist, because if you have power lines nearby, even below ground, above ground, or if you have bigger trees, don't be out there pruning it yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
It's
good
just
luck.
Not safe.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Sorry for that loss. Skip in Milton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Skip.
Well, hi, Larry. And Laura, I have a question for you, not regarding the storm, but regarding our ash tree, which is about 25 years old. It's a beautiful tree. However, and I have been treating it the last 2 years with a self-applying, just mix up the quart of solution in a bucket, you know, a couple of gallons of water or whatever, and poured it around the tree. It has looked healthy up until this year. What's happened this year is the leaves were late in coming out. Of course, they tend to be later than most of the other trees, but only a third to at most maybe a half of the leaves are out on throughout the tree. I mean, many small branches are bare, others are out, and the leaves themselves look good. We were considering having the injection, you know, where we would hire somebody, far more expensive treatment, but I just don't know if that's a sign that it has. We do have the emerald ash borer here in Milton. So it is here. The question is it, has it attacked our tree or not? How fast does that go? Would it be?
Okay. There's a couple things here. Before emerald ash borer hit town, a lot of ash trees will leaf out and they may drop some of their leaves. That's notorious for ash. Regarding the emerald ash borer, I find the most effective way is hiring a company and they inject a systemic insecticide, probably triazin, I get those two mixed up all the time. And what it is, it's a product that is injected into the xylem. It is taken up by the tree. It is transported throughout the entire tree. That if there are any emerald ash borer, it would kill the larvae. Now is a good time to do it. The trees are actively growing, taking up a lot of water. This is the best time of year to get good penetration throughout the whole tree. Yes, there are products on the market that you can buy that you can apply at the base of the tree. I'm always leery personally about stuff like that because other animals or other wildlife can come in contact. Even though it is a soil drench, you're not spraying it versus a trunk injection about every 2 to 3 years. And I just had mine done and it was like $75, but mine was about a 10-inch caliper tree, and I'm trying to save it because it's the only shade I have in my yard. I've planted a bunch of trees throughout my yard, but they're still small, and the hot afternoon sun just bakes my deck all day long. So having a little bit of shade on the other side of the patio helps. I strongly feel if your tree looks good and you want to keep the shade, then it's worth treating. And if it's already halfway dead, then it's not. So I would wait and see. My ash tree is just starting to leaf out myself. Yeah. They're always late. Same with honey locusts and other pinnately compound leafed trees compared to like maples or oaks. And I would kind of wait and see how it looks. But I think you get better uptake, better coverage by having it injected by a professional.
Yeah, there we go. I was in Watertown about a week ago, and we were at a kind of a ball diamond, and I'm looking around, and somebody said, gee, there's a lot of dead trees out there. And I looked around, and I said, every one of those that doesn't have leaves is an ash tree. Mm-hmm. They were the only ones.
Yeah, and
pretty
they become
easy
a hazard.
To pick them out.
They yeah. become a hazard. They become very brittle, and they break apart. And
they don't leaf as fast. And they might have been, many of them were probably just fine. They just hadn't leafed out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to Ann and in Maquanago. Hi, Ann.
Oh, hi. I have a quick question. Last week I planted a very dwarf ornamental crab, and it the nursery had trimmed back the crown quite a bit, but it flowered profusely, and now it's getting little tiny fruit. Mm-hmm. Would it be any advantage to the tree if I very carefully clipped off the fruit so that more of the energy of the plant would go into developing the root system, or wouldn't it matter at all?
Well, the leaves you want to leave on as much as possible because the leaves provide carbohydrates to establish a new root system. And you said you just planted it this year?
Mm-hmm, last week.
Yeah. I'm not a big fan of going out there removing every single fruit on the plant.
Okay.
It is a sink, meaning the energy is going towards the fruit production. I mean, you could if you really wanted to, but it's mainly watering the tree that needs to be done right now.
Mm-hmm.
We've had plenty of rain lately,
sure.
So. But, you know, newly established plants, they may flower the first year. Next year, they may not flower as well.
Uh-huh.
They're trying to establish a new root system, so you never want to prune back any of the foliage or branches to help the root system. That's an old myth. It's been proven wrong. You need as much of the canopy as possible to help establish a new root system. So
mm-hmm.
watering, mulching, keep the mulch away from the trunk of the tree, no more than, you know, 3 to 4 inches around, as far out as you can. To keep the turf from competing with the tree for water uptake.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks a lot for calling. Mark near La Crosse emailed to ask how long he can expect a redbud tree to live. His last one died after 13 years after a really harsh winter. Are there other trees that look nice but last longer?
Okay, you're in La Crosse. You know, redbud, I love redbuds. Absolutely love them. They're beautiful trees. And by the way, the flowers are edible and they're delicious. They're high in vitamin C. Redbuds are native over a large geographic range. They're native, not native in Wisconsin or Minnesota, but they're native from Michigan and Illinois all the way down into northern Florida. And with redbuds, they're propagated only by seed. You can't root cuttings worth a darn, or they're grafted, the cultivars. But most are seed propagated. And if the seed is collected from trees growing in the southern part of the range, you will have problems up north trying to grow those. So the two strains that were selected, one's called the Minnesota strain and the other is the Columbus, Wisconsin strain. They're not from actual native plants, but they were selected from, say, northern provenances or seed source from, say, Michigan or Illinois, and they've been growing in Wisconsin, in Columbus, and as well as in Minnesota for a long time, and they have withstood temperatures 30 below without any problems. So that's one issue. We need to make sure we're growing cold hardy redbuds to begin with. Second thing, redbud is really susceptible to verticillium wilt. So I would make sure that, I don't know if the tree's still there, because this is an email, I can't ask, but if it's a tree that is just came down, if you have any of branch material left, it would behoove you to get it tested to see if it actually died from verticillium wilt and not lack of cold hardiness. So that's one thing I'd be concerned about. Redbud is a beautiful tree, but you need to be careful. If a tree has died from verticillium wilt, you don't want to plant a redbud back in its place or anything that would be susceptible to verticillium wilt. And maples are very susceptible. There are other species. One of my favorite is, and I have one of these in my yard, is a serviceberry or amelanchier. Serviceberry, Juneberry is another name, Shadblow. They're native to Wisconsin, and they have beautiful white flowers for about a week in early spring. And then probably about next month, they have some really tasty fruit. It's delicious.
And you aren't the only one. A lot of folks recommend them.
I love it, but you got to site them properly. They don't like heavy clay, wet, compacted soils. Absolutely not. And you can plant them in full sun, but I think they do better with some afternoon shade. You know, mine is loaded right now with fruit, and I'm sure I'm going to have to beat the robin to get some fruit for me, because they get them very quickly.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. Here we are, about out of time. Lauren, it's always a great pleasure to have you with us. I hope you'll come back. And
oh, yes. I'd love to. I enjoy this show.
She'll be back, and she'll be with us again. Laura Gell, professor and extension specialist for woody ornamentals in the Department of Horticulture at the UW-Madison. She'll be back. Coming up next week on Garden Talk, native plant expert Neil DeBole will be with us.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah, he's always great. He'll be talking about native plants. And I hope you'll stay with us. There's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us and have a great weekend.